Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I got home and the door was locked. Then I tried to ring the bell. I found a little bitty note that she had wrote telling me to go to hell. I crawled in the window, I got inside, she kicked me in the balls and then I cried. Called me a name, said I lied, kicked me again and I thought I died. Took my clothes, set them on fire and hit me with her curling iron. I tried to block it with my watch and then she kicked me in the crotch again. Yeah, today's the day my wife met my girlfriend. Well, I tried to tell her, but she didn't care. Things weren't what they seemed. She had a pan on the stove full of boiling water, and my nads would soon be steamed. I tried to run, scream for help. She hit me in the nerves with the rhinestone belt. It was like nothing that I ever felt. I thank God I wasn't wearing a kilt. She grabbed a bat from beneath the bed. She swung it once, and then she missed my head. She reared back, swung it again, and then she hit me in the twins again. Yeah, today's the day my wife met my girlfriend.
Wow. Reminds me of my first wife. I like that song. Okay, we got Brian and we got Scott, and welcome to the UAW Factory Whistle Show. Hi, guys.
Hello.
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 How are you doing?
I'm retired again.
What?
I'm retired. And that job was killing me, man. I put my 2 weeks in, and they got a couple young people who needed jobs. You know, they start their training, and I weaseled out of my last 2 weeks. So I'm home where I belong, never to leave again.
And I don't blame you.
I don't either. Hell no. They tried to get me to go to another department. No. Hell no. I didn't see one department in there that I'd want to work in, I'll tell you that. So how's things going with you guys?
Well, it's about the same with me.
Oh, that's good.
Well, same with me, too. I mean, I didn't know if we had more.
Why now?
Why? Usually there's always something going on with Brian. I mean, I was just waiting for here it is.
Well, that means Brian, settle down. That's all. Come on.
I wouldn't necessarily say that.
I didn't think so.
As you know, I'm protesting the Solidarity House again.
Saw pictures
okay.
of that video.
I have been on Facebook. I got this automatic thing that gives me chips, and it says I'm playing, but I'm not. I haven't been around. I even worked Thanksgiving by myself, by the way. So what's going on? What's happening?
Well, the region decided to settle my grievance without telling me. And,
Oh, wow.
And how did they settle it?
Well, as you know, I told the National Labor Relations Board ahead of time that I thought the union was going through the fundamentals just to make it look like they were representing me when I knew they weren't.
Right.
And, well, now that they've settled, finally got off their butt and decided to settle my grievance without telling me, well, they proved me right. So what they did, as you know, I got walked out of a town hall meeting for voicing my opinion, which is my right to union activity under the National Labor Relations Board. So management violated my rights on that. So anyways, the union decided, the region, which, by the way, my regional rep is the old president from my local 1248, and which his name is Jason Craig, by the way. He's got a relationship with management. Now, this guy ain't never held position before. He got president of the local. He never became a steward or chairman or anything like that. He has no experience. He became the president. And all of a sudden, after the contract got done, he got down at the region. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's quick. That's a quick move up.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's related to somebody.
But either way, I called, what's going on with my grievance, kept playing phone tag. He wasn't calling me. I was constantly calling him. And kept making excuses, saying, well, you know, Mopar got a new regional rep, so we're going to hold off. Then I called back again. He said, well, they want to reinvestigate the whole situation. So every time I called, they had an excuse why they kept postponing my grievance.
Right.
So I got mad and I said, look, if you can't handle a simple grievance, send it to the next step. He's like, well, I'm handling it. So I said, but you ain't. I mean, it's sitting on your desk and you ain't doing nothing with it. You keep giving me excuses.
Wow.
So he said, well, when I meet with the labor and management, he said, I'll let you know ahead of time. Of course, he never let me know. He never called me to let me know he was going to meet with management and labor on a certain date. So time had gone by. I seen the new president of my local, and I asked him what's going on with my grievance. And he's like, well, the regional rep just called me and said they settled your grievance. I said, well, that's nice to know that they called me. They called you, but they didn't call me. And I said, okay, so what'd they settle on? He said, well, you're going to have to call them. Well, I said, but if they called you and told you, I'm sure you know the results.
Right.
Well, he wouldn't give me the results, so I ended up calling the region. I called Jason Craig, my regional rep. And by the way, every time I seem to get a hold of him, it almost sounds like when he answers the phone, he wakes up out of a dead sleep. You ever call somebody and you just tell they've been sleeping? I mean, that's
yeah.
the way he sounded. So it's evident that he don't seem to be doing anything down there. But so I called him, and he said that they settled on paying me for 2 days, and they settled on a verbal or counseling, and it's going to go on my file. And I said, well, I'm not settling for that. I said, because I didn't do nothing. I said, I don't have to prove I'm innocent. Management has to prove that I'm guilty of violating policy or the code of conduct. So I want to know how you guys came up with this verdict without any proof. And he was like, well, what do you mean? What do you mean? What do I mean? What proof did management give you that I violated a policy or that I violated the code of conduct? Because you can't just write insubordination on a grievance. Now, this is management's answer on my grievance. They put insubordination, but they put no code of conduct and no policy that I violated. They just put I was insubordinate. So if I was insubordinate, how was I insubordinate, and what code of conduct, what policy was I insubordinate under? So I asked them. I said, I want to know what proof they gave you to show you that I was breaking any policy or any code of conduct, and he wouldn't answer me. So he says, well, I said, well, I'm not settling for this. He said, well, I already settled your grievance. I said, I don't give a shit what you settled. I'm not settling for this. Send it to the next step. He said, well, I'm not doing that. He said, I already settled your grievance. So, of course, I was so furious. I turned around as soon as I got off the phone with him, and I called the National Labor Relations Board and talked to my caseworker. And told him, I told you this was going to happen. So, you know, after talking to the National Labor Relations Board, you know, they were kind of back and forth on what they would do for me. So it's kind of a 50-50 thing in the air. Not sure they're going to do anything or not, but I think I got enough proof to show that the union has not represented me, and they went through the fundamentals to do so. So now we'll see if the National Labor Relations Board steps up and does what they're supposed to for me. But either way, Well, I got put out on a Friday. I was told it would be a one-day DLO.
Right.
So I came back that following Monday. Security let me through the gates. I came in. The plant manager seen me. He said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "What do you mean what I'm doing here? You guys told me a one-day DLO." He said, "No, I didn't." I said, "My supervisor, another supervisor, the president of my local, and the alternate steward told me I got a one-day DLO." He said, "No, get out." So it ended up being a four-day DLO, which, by the way, is not in the policy. There is no four-day DLO.
No.
Four. Never heard of four-day.
No, not just that. They skipped the whole procedure. I didn't get a verbal. I didn't get a written verbal.
Well, they'd have to prove, and you're right. They're the moving party, as Dick D'Angelo would say. They're the moving party. They have to prove what you did wrong. What shop rule did you violate? You know, you have the right to know that. I mean, your committee person should have asked for that, and you're right. Usually it goes balance the shift a day, 3 days, 5 days, week, 2 weeks, 30 days, discharge. Now, some places are different as far as how they implement that to start out with. And what I mean by it's different than attendance. When it falls right under disciplinary layoff, those shop rules or shop rule that you violated needs to be cited. And it doesn't sound like that was cited.
But even so, like say, okay, they say Brian was insubordinate, okay? So, okay.
Well, whatever. How was you insubordinate?
And see, that's my point. If you cannot come out and tell me how I was insubordinate, then I have not violated anything. Because my definition of being insubordinate is as a supervisor had told me to do a job and I refused to do it. That would be insubordinate. But if a manager tells another grown man to shut up and I don't shut up, there's nothing
right.
under the code of conduct that says that's being insubordinate. Because
right.
as far as I'm concerned, that manager is being intimidating and threatening.
And disrespectful.
And disrespectful, plus they're violating my rights under the National Labor Relations Act, my protected union activity. Because as far as I'm concerned, a town hall meeting is a joint venture between the union and management. And because it had to do with WCL, which is world-class logistics, that proves my point. It's a joint venture. You can't just tell us to shut up in a town hall meeting and then call it insubordination because I didn't listen to you.
Right. Well, we know this is going to hit all of us. I mean, I can't remember what they call it at Ford. I mean, we know it as Six Sigma. It's lean manufacturing. They call it something else now. It's under a new name. And at General Motors, we have GMS, and so Global Manufacturing Systems. And where you have it is, what's it called again?
World-class logistics?
Yeah, world-class logistics. And it was in all of our national contracts. It's this team concept that they're going to be pushing. It's going to involve a whole lot of things. And people don't realize, you know, we try to talk about that at contract time, that this was going to affect everybody. And here it is. You've went through, you're the first one that we know publicly, that went through this fire, so to say, and we've seen how you've been treated. This is ridiculous. Now,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, with that being said, okay, if I'm not mistaken, your grievance has been settled now, okay? Now that that's happened, you have choices, okay? you can either take this up to Solidarity House, which you probably won't go any further, or you can go to the National Labor Review Board because they settled your grievance. Your grievance has been closed. So when you go to the National Labor Review Board, they're going to say, have you exhausted all internal procedures? Yeah, I have at this point because your grievance is settled. Unless you want to try to pursue going through Solidarity House and get them to do what's right. Now, what bothers me is they paid you for 2 days, and yet they said you got to have counseling. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. As far as being down would go, and I would think you'd think the same way, if I was found not guilty, then you make me whole. You clear my record off completely and pay me my back pay that you owe me. Instead, it bothers me because in this situation, they're going to put something on your record, say you got to get counseling, oh, but we're going to pay you for 2 days. Wait a minute. That sounds fishy, dude. That just sounds really fishy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because if I'm guilty, why would you pay me for 2 days? You wouldn't pay me, period.
Exactly. Exactly. Something's going on and you're not being told. I think all the conversation that was being talked about or taking place. And I would definitely get with whoever settled this and find out what that conversation went. I mean, you need to find that out before you can go further to find out what was said, because there might have been something else settled that you're not aware of. And I would want
to. I went to the National Labor Relations Board, and I already filed the complaint because I told them, look, I said, we had Norwood Jewell came to our plant, had a town hall meeting on company in a company facility, and they only allowed 50 people out of 700 on first shift in one of the buildings show up. So only 50 people out of the 700 were allowed to go. So I filed a complaint on that. I filed a complaint that every time it rains, the building floods, and the union has not called OSHA. They had not filed a grievance on the safety. I said they've been told about it over and over again. And I said that's proof that they're not representing the membership. And I sent them pictures, by the way. The fact that they haven't proved that I was guilty of violating any procedures, conduct or policies. I told them, I said, look, they're upset because I got my union page. I said, it's kind of a backlash because I'm speaking out against them, basically blowing the whistle. And the page is public. They know the page exists. I said, they're mad because years ago I posted a video on YouTube against the union, and I said, basically, it's a backlash, and they're failing to represent me. And so with all the information and proof that I gave to the National Labor Relations Board, I'm hoping that they'll put a stop to the settlement, and they're going to force the company and the union to make me whole and to settle this case properly. Again, I've been at the Solidarity House protesting. From what I was told, that Dennis Williams was at Black Lake this past week. And as I was making these videos, Facebook has got that live streaming. So I'm basically filming people coming and going like they're not even on a time clock, right? And so Friday I went down there, and the entire Solidarity House was leaving by noontime. I mean, they were cutting out early for the holiday, and I can tell you right now they were on pay. Now, none of us are just allowed to leave our plants early just because it's the holiday unless we get permission and get a PA day or a vacation day. But these people were all leaving, and there's no doubt in my mind they were all getting paid. I have people just walking across the street, going to get coffee at the gas station over there, when you know they got coffee in the Solidarity House. I mean,
right.
These people are just coming and going, you know? And I mean, it's like, you wonder why my case ain't getting taken care of, because nobody's doing anything.
Well, they're all salary. Nobody just punches a clock. I don't know about the unionized secretarial staff. They may have to punch a clock, but as far as everybody else that's in there, Brian, they're all salary. They get paid an annual wage. I don't know how they break their pay down to them. It's probably bi-monthly, I'd imagine, but I'm just saying, they don't have to punch clock. And you know, the only ones that they are, that they answer to is not us, but they answer to themselves, especially the executive board and their staff. They answer to the executives. So they do just more than just us. I mean, some people have small parts and, you know, various aspects. They go a lot. Regional directors, they don't punch a time clock either. I don't know. Who's your servicing rep from Solidarity House to your location?
Well, that's who I'm trying to find out. I'm trying to find that out now. I haven't had no luck because there ain't nobody at the Solidarity House.
Right. Well, you can call your region and say, hey, who's our servicing rep from Solidarity House for this location? You know, because your president was handling your grievance, and that would have should have been your chairman, I would think. That's usually who bargains.
Well, it did. It went through the steward, it went through the chairman, it went through the president of the local, and then it went to the region. And none of those were able to settle such a simple case. They were just going through the fundamentals to make it look like they were fighting for me, and they didn't do nothing.
Well, whoever is over at the region, they're the ones that settled your grievance for you.
Well, yeah, that's Jason Craig. He used to be my old president.
But he's no longer there, right?
He's no longer at the local. Now he's at the region. He's our regional rep.
Okay, so I guess my question would be timeline then. When did you write the grievance? When did you write the grievance? When did they settle the grievance? And was he still at the regional when they settled the grievance? Or did somebody else get your grievance settled from the region? You see what I'm saying?
Well, I got put out on that Friday, and I came back that Monday. I got sent back out again. I came back that Thursday, and that following Monday is when my grievance got written, okay? So the grievance got written after the fact that I came back. Now, remember
you weren't allowed to write a grievance before you left?
They didn't write the grievance after when I got walked out. So remember, when I got walked out, I went home, I took the one-day DLO, I came back that following Monday when they told me, no, we didn't tell you to come back, we didn't tell you it was a one-day DLO, come back until we tell you. So at that point, I was pissed. So I went to the Solidarity House, and I was protesting out in front of the Solidarity House. And
right.
I told you guys, then Brian Rothenberg had came outside from the Solidarity House, and I had talked to him. So the next thing I knew, I got a call from my local to come back to work. So I'm assuming that Brian Rothenberg called somebody and told them to get me out in front of the Solidarity House and get me back to work. So I came back to work that Thursday, and it wasn't until that following Monday when my grievance got written. So now that the grievance got written, they were just going through the fundamentals to make it look like they were representing me. And the steward, the chairman, and the local president couldn't settle the grievance, so it ended up going to the region. Now, remember, my regional rep used to be my old president. So me and him bumped heads from time to time when he was my local president. Now here he is, my regional rep, don't know nothing, and he's down here representing my grievance on management's behalf. So he just settles to make it look like he did something for me by giving me 2 days of pay when he didn't do nothing for me. So he just wanted to make it look like he was half-ass representing me when technically he wasn't doing nothing. So he's like, well, I got you 2 days of pay. Like, I'm supposed to clap my hands for that, right?
Right, right.
But you have no proof that I violated anything. You're just basically going off of what management told you. And so, therefore, you didn't fight for nothing. Because the management is not providing any proof of me violating any code of conduct or any policies. You did not do your job as a regional rep.
Right.
You went through the fundamentals to make it look like you were doing something by getting me 2 days of pay, but that was it. And why would you give me two days of pay if you still think I'm guilty of it?
I agree. I mean, as far as, you know, me and Don would go, and our past experiences, either you're all in or you're all out. There is no middle of the road like what they give you.
Right.
I would did anybody investigate? Did anybody get witness statements as far as what was said?
Well,
you know what
from
I mean?
What I was from what I was told, there was a couple of people that were at the town hall meeting that gave a statement to the steward, and which, by the way, I told the National Labor Relations Board, my caseworker, to make sure he gets those statements. They would not provide those statements to me, so I don't know who wrote the statements, and I don't know what was in the statements. But I can tell you right now that that day that that happened, I was not feeling very well. And so even though I wasn't feeling well, I still felt that I needed to say something. So I didn't swear. I didn't get out loud. I didn't get loud. And I didn't get threatening. So if I wasn't being loud or threatening or any of that, I mean, so what is it that I violated? Because as far as I'm concerned, we have allowed to speak. We're allowed to speak in a town hall meeting.
The person who investigates this would be your committee person. That's who's going to go out and get and find the facts. And they're going to take witness statements, and they were one of them. You should include that in your complaint that they told me it was going to be a one-day DRO. And when I come back, you know, the following day, you know, afterwards, the plant manager throws me out. That's dual supervision, you know, and that's not my foreman that told me that. That was the plant manager. So,
well, see, but not just that. It was dual supervision at the town hall meeting because he's not my direct supervisor. So
right.
How do you tell me to shut up when you're not my supervisor? You're a manager.
Well, with being a town hall meeting, that might be a little bit different because you're in a crowd. But it still seems like they wouldn't walk you out of the building like that. They'd walk you down to labor.
Okay, but even still, even if it's a town hall meeting, how come my union ain't getting that manager for being intimidating and threatening?
That's a good question. That's a great question. You know,
so
to show they don't like these squeaky wheels.
I need a card.
So, you know?
I'm speaking on behalf of the membership because management wants to blame us on our mistakes. And they want to blame us for failing the audit. But at the end of the day, now tell me if I'm wrong, but at the end of the day, it's management that runs the business, makes the decisions, sets up the process, and directs the workforce. So if the management directs me to do something a certain way, and I do it that way, and it doesn't work out the way management thought it was going to work out, whose fault is it? Mine or theirs?
Yeah, it's theirs. This thing has been around longer than you've been alive, probably longer than I've been alive, and probably longer than Don's been around. But Don, I'll tell you what this one goes. If you want to screw management, you do exactly what they say.
Now I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you something else I brought up to the National Labor Relations Board, which is being forced on us in the plant right now. You guys know back in 2007, they negotiated housekeeping away, and the union and the company agreed to scab our jobs out, bring in caravan nights, and unionize them behind our backs. Am I correct?
Yes. They outsourced
That's what happened. So now they're telling us that we got to clean out the racks. So now I get upset because I'm like, that's not our job. Well, sure, it's your job. It's part of 5S. 5S is part of WCL. Well, the last time I remember, WCL, World Class Logistics, is volunteering the contract. I didn't volunteer. Well, it doesn't matter. We're telling you it's part of your job assignment.
Right.
Again, it's part of WCL. WCL states in the contract, it's about being smart and lean. If you negotiated those jobs away back in 2007 and you said it was not cost effective to have housekeeping in there making $28 an hour to push a broom, and you bring in a contract house for cheaper wages, and now you're telling me that it is cost effective, now you want me to start cleaning these racks. But, again, if WCL, World Class Logistics, is about being smart and lean, wouldn't it be smart to pay that contract house to clean those racks versus me? Because I have a job to do. My job is to get these parts out to the plants and to the dealerships. That's what makes the money. I cannot make money if I'm pulling trash out of these racks. That's not being smart and lean as far as I'm concerned.
No, they consider it lean because what they want is they don't have to hire nobody else. That's why it was incorporated into our contract. They want you to do that and do your job.
But that's not being lean because they did hire somebody. They hired Caravan Nights to clean. So they're already there. They're unionized. So
right.
As far as I'm concerned, since they make cheaper wages, let them clean it. That's their job.
I agree.
Okay.
Because
now you're,
putting, now you're putting more of a burden on our shoulders.
586, you're on. I think you're Jones.
Yes, sir. Evening, gentlemen.
Hey, what's going on, Jones?
Hey.
So my point is you're putting more of a burden on us. I mean, you want us to run the plant. You want all of our ideas to make the plant more efficient, cost-effective. You talk about this working relationship we're supposed to have, but the first time I speak the truth, that relationship is out the window. Now you violated my rights. You walked me out, and this relationship reminds me of a man and a woman where the man's constantly beating the woman, and the woman keeps coming back because she loves the man so much, but she takes the abuse. That's what the union reminds me of. We keep taking the abuse from management and keep coming back instead of fighting back. And I'm not going to tolerate this. I'm going to be out in front of that Solidarity House. Matter of fact, I got a new sign that I'm creating. It's going to say the UAW leadership does not support equality or the rights of its members. And so hopefully I'll get that sign made up in the next week so I have another sign to add to my other one about the leadership reform. But either way, I'm going to be out in front of the Solidarity House because if you can't protect us, the international leadership cannot protect us. They cannot stop jobs from leaving the country. They couldn't protect housekeeping. They couldn't protect American Axle, even after they were told to drop down in wages. The job still went over to Mexico. They couldn't protect St. Louis Minivan. They couldn't protect security when it was part of Chrysler. So how are they going to protect the rest of us? They took $400 million and wasted it down south and didn't get nothing for it. And then up to our union dues, just to tell us that we're the new union. We don't strike because we'll lose market share. If you don't believe me, they told me that. I got a letter. I can scan that letter, and I can post it on my Facebook page. And the fact that our copay or our premiums have gone up in our health care. The purpose of a union is to fight for equality, better working conditions, better wages, better benefits, safety, rights, and they're no longer doing this.
Shorter hours?
$200 for what?
Shorter hours. Shorter hours. Shorter work weeks was in there,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah. Shorter work week. They're not even fighting for that. There's people working 10-6s. Right? And so they came out with what? Alternative work schedules. Why did they come out with the alternative work schedules? To keep you guys from organizing. That's
right.
What the International did. They did that on purpose. You guys are being played
right.
by your leadership. They're holding you down.
Well, you know, I mean, you can ask Jones. Ask Jones what he thinks how that grievance procedure went for you. You know what I mean?
It's a joke. It's a joke. I mean, plain and simple, it's a joke. You got the first step gets written. I mean, it's a joke all the way down because at any time, whether the steward finds merit, committee person out of the chain finds merit in it, they can always renegotiate it. I mean, they can drop it. Because at the end of the day, it's going to lie with that individual, whether they think it has merit, and they'll say it for their own grievance. You know,
it's got merit because it falls under the National Labor Relations Act. It's protected union activity. Unless I threaten somebody or cuss somebody out, it's protected under the National Labor Relations Act. So for them to sit there and say there's no merit in that grievance, then if there was no merit, that you wouldn't, for one, if there was no merit, you wouldn't even wrote a grievance, okay? But the fact that you did write the grievance shows that there was merit, but the fact that you just kind of went through the protocol to make it look like that you were representing me, but you couldn't settle it on a local level, even though it falls under the National Labor Relations Act, and then it gets up to the region, and even the region decides to screw me over by settling for 2 days, basically saying, well, we don't have no proof to say that you violated any procedure or code of conduct, but we got you 2 days of pay. So be happy that we got you something. But no, that ain't the way it works, see? Because if you know that they violated my protected activity under the National Labor Relations Act, you should have had that grievance beaten. No questions asked. It should have been beaten. Management wouldn't have had a chance. So,
no, I agree with you on it. I wasn't speaking towards yours. I was just speaking like general terms, the whole grievance
right.
procedure, how it's broken. Not yours, just in general. You know,
right.
But my question, they came back and said, okay, you get 2 days. So my question, you know, if I was in those shoes, whether you get an answer or not, is how do I basically get 2 days off without pay, but I get a written warning with counseling? Those two don't coincide. I mean, the new procedure is verbal warning, written warning, with counseling, 3 days, 30 days termination, at which any point
right.
they can go back and revisit any of the steps. But how do you get time off and a written warning with counseling? They're two totally different things. So
well,
they're managing them together.
They're creating new policies as they're going along. They're
right.
just creating policies out of thin air.
Exactly. They're saying we're going to give you time off, but it's only at this step. It's like, no, that's however you interpret it, whether in union management, if you read it, no way does it say you should get a written warning with counseling but get time off. Or does it say you should get time off and get a verbal written warning, however you want to match it. It's not lining up. You know, I mean,
right.
it, you know.
No, I agree. I mean, that's why it's got me so pissed, and that's why I'm out in front of that Solidarity House, because I'm like, no, none of this crap makes sense. And over the last quite a few decades, the Solidarity House has been hiring their family and friends that don't know nothing about labor. Because I just told you, like I just told you, we had a guy that never held a steward position or a chairman position, but he was president of our local. And now he's at the region. He has no experience. So you're putting people with no experience in these positions, and this is what I get at the end of the day.
Right, and the sad thing is that he handles, amongst not just your plant, but whatever other facilities that he covers, he handles
right.
all the four-step grievances, at which point they've left either your VP's or your president's hand at all the facilities that he reps, and now he's got no grievance experience, no negotiating experience pertaining to that, and he's handling all these grievances. So how does he sit down and negotiate when he's ever actually went through the steps of, like you said, steward, so on and so forth? I mean, you got to know how to write a grievance in order to negotiate it. And step two, step
right.
three, how do you get to step four? You know, even jumping straight to president, he's still got two steps below him as far as grievance procedure, to where he's never written one. He didn't negotiate it at step two, which is committee man. I mean, I don't understand that whole concept. You know,
well, let me tell you, the membership voted for him, and that's how it happened. So.
Well, if the membership
continues to have this mindset that they say, well, that's my boy, or they're part of a clique, and that's the way their mindset works, and that's the way they vote, we're going to keep going down this path.
Right. President, I understand, because they're elected by the membership at that facility. But the regional position, it has nothing to do with the membership. He didn't get elected to that.
Well,
you know,
he got the regional position because – he was able to sell the contract the second time. The first time at Mopar, it actually failed. But the second time, it ended up passing. So somebody at the Solidarity House must have liked him and said, hey, I got a spot for you, and brought him down to the region.
Right. But I'm even with that, though, like, you bring somebody down there that's only handled step when they haven't written them, they haven't negotiated them at step two. And I don't know the man, don't know his track record, but – I mean, you're skipping a lot of steps there, like the starting core foundation of a house, if you will, to get to the end result when you've never actually, you know, started it from the ground up. I mean, I just don't grasp that whole concept.
Yeah, me neither, but that's the way it went down, so it is what it is. But in the meantime, I'm going to continue to be at the Solidarity House until they correct this. I got the complaint in against the company and against the union with the National Labor Relations Board. So, and I know that the National Labor Relations Board has got a relationship with the company and the union. So, I mean, we'll see if the National Labor Relations Board does their job for me or not. Right now, I'm at a 50-50 and kind of tipping more towards they're not going to do what they're supposed to. But, again, it's a little bit too early to speak on that. So I'll wait to just see what they do.
Right.
But in the meantime, I will be at the Solidarity House, and I'm going to let these people know publicly that I'm shaming our leadership because they don't know what the hell they're doing. So that's just me. I want my money, and I want that out of my record, and I'm going to make it happen. Because if not, if I got to make another video and cost the shareholders of the company money, I'm going to do that. Even if I get fired, because as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to get more from your shareholders than you're going to get from my broke ass if I get fired. And then I'm going to make sure that the international leadership has an issue with getting more members, because I'm going to let the public know, and I'm going to continue it. If you couldn't handle my case, you ain't going to be able to handle nobody's case. If you can't fight for me, you can't fight for nobody. If you can't save me, you can't save anybody else. Because as far as I'm concerned, I said it from the get-go. When the international said it's best to save the body and cut off the limbs, we are the limbs. They are saving themselves with tier ones, tier twos, tier threes, TPTs, contract houses. They're saving themselves with whoever they can save themselves with. Basically, the UAW has become a glorified contract house, nothing more. They're not a representative of labor anymore. They're a contract house. There's a difference. A contract house basically is somebody that supplies labor to a business and gets money for it. A union is somebody that fights for their membership, fights for labor, fight for better benefits and wages and a better work environment. But we no longer have that type of union no more. They're just a contract house. That's it. That's the truth.
They're buddies. They're partners. I tell you, they're business partners now.
You know my motto, if I lose, they're going to lose with me. I'm going to do whatever I can to put the UAW out into the public eyes. Because, I mean, the unions are already hated, for one. But I'm going to make it clear that I believe that we need a union. I believe in a union. But I believe in the old school union, the union that fought for everything. Not this new union that's given up everything. So know the difference, people. I'm not anti-union. I'm just anti-new union. Because it was the old union that fought very hard to get us what we all have. And this new union is giving it all back. So there's a difference. And if this union ain't going to fight for us, then it needs to go. And I know a lot of people, another thing too, a lot of people are saying, well, let's hold back our union dues. Well, I don't want to do that neither. Why? Because eventually the leadership at the Solidarity House will start liquidating things. They'll start getting rid of Black Lake. They'll start cutting into the strike fund until they dwindle us down to nothing to make up the difference for union dues that we're not paying, right? So then once the UAW collapses financially, then granted, okay, sure, we beat the union, but who's going to protect us from the company? So I'm not here to collapse the UAW as a whole financially. I'm here for UAW leadership reform. We need new leadership in there, period, from the ground up. I'm not trying to break this union. All the assets, all the money that's at the Solidarity House is our money. It's our assets.
Right.
So we can't afford to get rid of those, but we can't afford to get rid of the leadership. And I told you, the only way to get rid of that leadership is through that Solidarity gate. It's no different. Mm-hmm. It's no different than you guys picketing outside the plant during a strike. You're fighting against the company because they're trying to screw you over. Well, the UAW leadership is screwing us over. We should be out in front of that Solidarity House protesting and letting them know that we're not happy with what they're doing to us. We want change. We want leadership reform, and we want it done now. Remember, these are people just like the rest of us. Just because they're in a leadership position and got a title doesn't mean that they're honest or ethical. Doesn't mean they can't screw us over, because they are. The proof is there. It's obvious we're getting screwed. Every contract. But you guys keep getting conned by the Solidarity House as they're taking your union dollars to hire a PR firm to lie to you, and you guys keep falling for it. Why? Because you guys are impressed on that little $3,000 bonus they keep throwing at you.
Right. That's true.
Well, I would rather have that money in my wages so it would show up in my pension.
Right.
And for those that don't have pensions, my two-tier brothers and sisters, if we all stuck together, we could fight and get that pension back for you. So you would have a pension. But we're all fighting and we're all divided on the floor. Why? Because our leadership at the Solidarity House no longer supports equality. And because they don't support equality, guess what? They got us. They're undermining us from within. They got us divided from within. So we're fighting with each other instead of fighting them. They're the cause of this. There are legal boys under the National Labor Relations Board. They are the ones that negotiate these contracts. They are the ones that hide language from us. They are the ones that hire PR firms to lie to us. Well, as far as I'm concerned, they're the blame. We should be down there blaming them and forcing them for this change that we need. So you guys can keep sitting back and expecting something to change, but it ain't going to change unless you're fighting for it. You guys are being had big time. And I'm just one man. I'm one man that I got walked out eight times. And I've been with Chrysler for 18 years. I've been walked out eight times. Seven times for being intimidating and threatening. Okay? Now, that gets a little watered down. You can't keep throwing me out for being intimidating and threatening because you keep bringing me back and putting the plant in danger. Right? Plus, I've never touched nobody in the 18 years I've been at Chrysler. So, I mean, you're kind of watering that whole thing down now. So they had to come up with a new one. So now I'm insubordinate. Well, how am I insubordinate? Where's the proof? Because I spoke out against you? Because you're up there blaming us and you don't make any sense? Because at the end of the day, you run the business, you set the policies, you direct the workforce, and because you don't know what you're doing, I'm at fault?
Right.
That whole management team at Mopar should be fired. Because none of them know what they're doing. And the bottom line is, the people at the headquarters must not know what's going on, because they're not coming to find out why our management hasn't passed an audit in the last 2 years, and they keep postponing it. And they've wasted numerous man hours, and they wasted numerous amounts of money. So basically money that could have went to the shareholders. But the management at the headquarters is not holding the lower management accountable for doing their job. But it's not my it's not my responsibility to run the business. It's not my job to tell you how to run the business or to set the policies. It's my job to do what my job description tells me. Now, you guys can't keep adding jobs. Well, that's another issue. Whatever happened to negotiating job changes, right? So a contract comes every 4 years, but here you're making job changes in the middle of a contract. So you keep opening up the contract, letting management change our jobs or eliminate jobs or add more work to our jobs, whatever. What the hell? What's the purpose of a contract, voting on a contract and ratifying a contract if you're going to keep changing the contract within the 4 years?
Right.
I don't get this shit. Why ain't the membership speaking out against this?
That's a good question. It is. And I scratch my head and I wonder why. Because anybody around us that are around the show, that listens to the show, we've been talking about this for years. I mean, a long time. And, you know, we just keep doing what we're going to keep doing. And hopefully one day they wake up, they see what's going on, and you would think that they're going to smell the coffees burning on the burner there. All we can do. Let me tell you something,
people. Listen. I love you because you're my union brothers and sisters. I do not survive without you. If one falls, we all fall. You got to remember something. I'm not out here fighting for just Brian Keller. You understand that? Because if I'm not fighting for your interests, I'm not fighting for my interests.
Right.
I cannot move forward without you, because it ain't just my vote that counts. It's everybody's vote that counts. But if you guys are not willing to fight and wake up and see that the union is screwing you over, we're going to continue to fail. These companies have been making record profits since the financial collapse of 2008. And we haven't gained anything. Nothing. Nothing. We were stagnant for 10 years. Our pension was stagnant for 10 years. We still got tiers, right?
More tiers.
They're unionizing contract houses. We're paying more into our health care. I mean, what did we gain? When are you people going to fight this leadership that is screwing us all over? Listen, when you guys go home, look at those precious little faces that you go home to, right? Or your spouse, your beautiful wife, or your husband, or your children, right? We go to work because we have to provide for them. That's why we go to work. Nobody wants to go to work. You have to go to work. That's how that's how you live, right? You need the money to put food on the table, to put heat in the house, or to put a roof over your head, or clothes on your back. You can't do that if the union is stripping us of everything and giving it back to the company. So if you're not going to do it for you and you're not going to do it for me, then do it for your loved ones. Get out here and fight with me, because I'm one man out in front of the Solidarity House, and I ain't just fighting for this damn grievance that I got screwed on. I've been out in front of the Solidarity House so many times it ain't even funny. I've been out there for the retirees. I've been out there for the tears, right? Because I don't think it's right that we have tears. I believe in equality. I believe in looking out for our retirees who was out there before us and fought to keep what we had, and we're giving it all back. Why? Because you guys are being misinformed by your leadership. You talk about education. UAW talks about education, but they're lying to you. They're misinforming you. They're misleading you. I'm telling you the truth because I'm living it and you're living it. And so when I'm telling you something, you know it's the truth because you're going through the same thing I'm going through. Well, so I'm asking you to stand up to this leadership. I'm asking you. I need your help.
If people aren't aware what happens to you or what has happened to you, they need to be aware that it can happen to them also.
If it already has.
And then it becomes a little more personal. Then they say, well, maybe that Brian guy, maybe he was on to something there. You know what I mean? Sometimes not many people have walked in your shoes at all. And until they start to do that, they don't understand what you're trying to say. We do. You're absolutely fighting for all of us because we realize that if we give up this fight, whether it be Jones or yourself or Don, me or Rebecca or whoever, when we quit fighting, it's all done. The war is over. There's no more battle. The war is over completely. You know, we have bad leadership in positions who volunteered you through a contract that you may not have agreed on, okay? So, I don't agree with a lot of stuff that's in our contract. And however it passed, I don't know how it passed. Well, we know how it passed, but I'm just saying, when that happens, our life changed. Our life changed 2 contracts ago. We told people that it was going to be in the contract then. Nobody listened. Nobody listened. We capped our pensions. We closed that all off. This one, they opened up the pension language. They changed the healthcare language. Everything we've been fighting for the last 30-plus years. Thank you, Dennis Williams, Cindy Estrada, Jimmy Settles, Norwood Jewell. Thank you guys very much for negotiating these contracts for us. I'll tell you what,
Hang on, Scott. Don't blame it all on them. The dumbasses that work in those on all our plants and the membership of the UAW are the ones that let them get away with it because they keep voting yes on these stupid, terrible contracts. And why the union, they got a bulk of the blame, but it's don't let the membership off.
Right.
They see that little, that little bonus check that'll be gone in less than 3 to 4 weeks. They'll be gone. They see that and they think that that's big money to them.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
I don't know why. But yeah, it's blame the membership. We can say no.
No. And I agree. I mean, we did that. I did that personally at a rollout. I tried to make all three of them. I tried to make all three shifts. You know, said well up over 24 hours trying to do that and asking tough questions that they couldn't answer. You know, but yet at my local, the national contract passed by 73%. Okay, what we have is we have temporaries who are allowed to vote on a contract.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
You have temporary people who come in and vote on a contract with, like we talked about prior shows, people who are voting on a contract that they don't get to participate in, specifically our pensions, our health care. They don't get that. Yes, they're allowed to vote on it. Now, I understand. They're a dues-paying member. They're entitled to vote. The catch-22. I don't think when the people who are temporary – who don't have a pension at all should not be allowed to vote on that language.
But
so
but if you're going to let TPTs vote, why can't the retirees vote?
Oh, absolutely. Boy, wouldn't that be a game changer. Wow. Yeah, there you go. Now, that being said, we've been saying that for years, too. The engine said that first. Any retiree can run for president of your local union, vice president, recording secretary, financial secretary, sergeant at arms, and trustee. The only thing a retiree can't do is run for shop chairman because they can't go inside the plant. Can't represent the people like that. But everybody else who's locals can run. A retiree can run for that. Don't think there aren't retirees out there that are pissed off about this.
But that just proves my point, how the international has changed their language to set their agenda and to set it in their favor and to suppress the membership. Because all of that is set up for them to keep them in place. All that language works against us.
Well, I mean, your president of the UAW came out and he told all of us last fall. He told all of us. He told everybody, we need to keep these corporations viable. That's not your job. That's the CEO's job. That's not your job. Your job is to protect the membership. You know? So, but you're also talking to somebody who's the president of UAW who introduced at a union scale tiered wages. Okay? That's Dennis Wynn's legacy is a tiered system. And it's bad. It's bad all over.
Not just that. Listen, we cannot. There's no way for us to be viable and to be competitive with these trade deals. For one, two, when these companies overseas are paying their people a couple bucks a day, the only way we can stay competitive with that is by lowering our wages down to theirs and our benefits. So there's no possible way for us to stay competitive and viable unless we become a third world country. That's realistic. Let's be real. Common sense is that we are not going to be viable and competitive without coming down and being a third world country, because we cannot compete with Mexico or China. Not unless we lower our wages and we get rid of all of our rights. But I'm going to tell you, American companies
are
making record profits since the bankruptcy. So how is that? How is it that Marchionne was able to earn $1 million?
Hang on. You're talking to the wrong person with that argument. And not only do I agree with you, I'll tell you why you're talking to the wrong person. Like you're preaching the choir, because I've been saying this for a long time. Look, Danzen said this years ago, and I kind of carried that torch on forward. All you got to do is look at the North American operations profit. the whole profit. Now, I'm not talking about EBITDA adjusted and this and that. Look at the whole profit for North American operations. Divide that amongst the North American operations employees. And what you'll find out, Brian, is that each one of you has made anywhere between $1.5 million per person is the wealth that's generated for the corporations. So don't tell me we're expensive. You know what I'm saying? I hit that with the executive administrator, Cindy Estrada. She didn't know. Don was there. I floored her. I shut her butt down in front of a whole bunch of people. Didn't I?
Oh, yeah. I was there. Yeah, I see. And I was laughing my...
She didn't know what to do. Argue that with me. I dare anybody to argue that with me. From Jones, yourself, to me, we create millions of dollars of profit apiece for the corporation. That's even more for the temporaries, for the part-time temporaries, the long-term temporaries, the flex workers. I mean, let's call it what it is. The flex workers are back. They just changed the name. The flex workers are back. You got long-term temporaries, and now we got something we've never seen before, full-time temporaries.
But not just that.
That's an oxymoron.
But not just that, these companies are not just servicing North America. They're servicing South America, Asia, Europe, you name it. They're servicing all these other countries. So it's not just about what they make in the United States, because you got to remember, they got plants in all these other countries where they're getting cheap labor that's building these
cars. I understand.
And they're selling these cars in these other countries, so They're making billions and billions on top, but they're not bringing that money back to the United States.
Sure. Your Mexican workers, I think, are making like $5 an hour now, if I'm not mistaken. You know, I used to be like $5 a day, but it's $5 an hour now, I think. Okay, so, you know, what are they working? At least 9 hours a day. So, you know, they're maybe making $45 a day. I don't know what the taxes are like down there in Mexico. I'm sure they're not very nice. I understand what you're saying. They're still making lots of money because if you make a vehicle, let's say, we'll take your family ride, for instance. Take that nice big Jeep Grand Cherokee, maybe $50,000 ride. If it's made here in the States, which I think it is, it might have cost them $5,000 or $6,000 to make that vehicle. You know, cause they tell you the labor cost is right around 7%. Let's say it cost them $7,000. Hell, let's say it cost them $10,000 to build it. That includes the lights, the gas, the labor, skill trades, everything, all rolled in. Well, that still allows them $40,000 worth of profit, doesn't it, Brian? You know, and then when you compound that to somebody down in Mexico who's making way less money than what we're making. And when they bring that vehicle back here and they sell it in the States for the same price, gee, that just means your profit margin went up on that vehicle, didn't it? You know.
Personally, I think the labor cost is somewhere around 4 or 5% because of all the different tiers, and because we're paying more into our health care. All those cost cuts, it's got to be around 4 to 5%.
I agree. I mean. Jones, what are you guys here on your plant for? What do you guys talk about when these kind of subjects come up?
Jones?
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Hey,
maybe we got disconnected.
Don there?
Don?
Uh-oh.
We on the show by ourselves?
Okay, I guess.
They must be sleeping.
Must be. Yeah. Yeah. That job wears him out. You know. Well, anyway, hey, you know, I used to use this analogy a long time ago. Do you remember the Cadillac Avalanche?
Yeah.
Oh, not the Cadillac, the Chevrolet Avalanche. And then you had the Cadillac, I think it was the EXLT, the truck version of the Avalanche.
Yeah, they were pretty similar.
They're made the same place, just like a GMC and a Chevy truck, built on the same line. Faces might be a little bit different, grills, you know. The cosmetics a little bit different, but it's still the same vehicle, built in the same factory. Okay? If I remember right, up until the last time they built them, I think, was 2011, they quit building them. They were getting over $40,000 pure profit off the Cadillacs. That's crazy. Pure profit. You know? But my question is, you know, we've been hearing about organizing the South for years. And this, you know, picks at you and I both. Well, you know, I've always been wondering, for the last 25 years, you've been wanting to organize the South. Maybe you didn't go South far enough, because you've been wasting a lot of time not getting anywhere in the southeastern United States. Why didn't you ever care about the Mexican people working down there for these poverty wages? Kind of goes against your core beliefs, don't it? Questions to ask. How come they never tried to organize Mexico?
Well, them not supporting equality should go against their core beliefs, because equality, that's what the union was built on.
Right.
And for the union to now support all these different tiers and to support TPTs and unionizing contract houses, that tells you that this union is no longer on the same platform it was built on. They got a whole different agenda nowadays, and it sure ain't looking out for their membership.
Right. I agree. I absolutely agree. We're in a sad state of disarray, man. I mean, I posted something earlier to workers in the workplace of the unions from the Wall Street Journal. The Chrysler Automotive is scrambling to keep their lineup of the small European city cars afloat in the U.S. market, because the gas prices are low right now. Specifically, their lineup of the Fiat 500, they're lowering the sticker prices by as much as $3,900. They're trying to jumpstart a 6-year effort to make the brand viable again, and you know, their U.S. inventory is bloated. It's sad right now. They're hurting. And we know that's a whole other issue in itself, because we know that Marchionne has been using the Chrysler money to keep Fiat afloat for years now, right? Since he bought them out, right?
Well, absolutely.
And that's not a good practice either, because all you're doing is you're stealing from Peter to pay Paul, right?
Yep.
You know, when Paul runs out of money, Peter's going to run out of money too. You know, in the deal that our government plays in this whole part. I posted this story too. Did you know that the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration is going to give GM more time to do long-term tests of Takata airbag inflators on the older trucks and SUVs?
Yeah,
including. Okay. So that means they're going to give them more time to prove these things are safe, and we already know they're not safe. This is ridiculous. I see politics and money around this whole thing. And the bottom line comes down to is, where is Dennis Williams? Where is Dennis Williams? You know what I mean? He's, again, not protecting you and I. Where's Norwood Jewell or Jimmy Settles or Cindy Estrada? Again, they're not protecting their membership. It's just scary. I mean, we don't want to see none of our employers get in trouble. That is for sure. But, you know, you also want to know that they're out there fighting for us, and they're fighting to have a good quality vehicle. So,
and you know, it's kind of funny that our bonuses, our profit sharing, and any bonuses from world-class manufacturing, world-class logistics is all based off of management's performance. So if management is not doing what they're supposed to do, then it's the membership that takes the hit.
Right.
So that's what I'm saying. Everything that the union has done has been against the membership. Nothing is for the membership. Everything is totally against us. It's all for them, and it's all for the company.
Right. Now, it's a sad day that we're having this discussion about a once great union that we had, you know. So it's
The union is only as good as its members, and if the members ain't willing to fight for their babies, or for their families, or for their way of life, then we get what we ask for, right? Because Scott Shingledecker or Scott Holderson or Don or Jones or Rebecca or myself, we can't be the only ones out here doing this. We can't be the only ones out here fighting. We can't be the only ones out here educating people. You guys, you
right.
come on the show and you listen to the show every Sunday. Okay? We're doing it for us. But we need you to join with us. We need you to fight with us. You can't just come on the show and listen to the information, because the information is no good if you're not going to act on it.
Right.
Because you live this in the plant every day. You're probably going through a lot of the same things that we are. So you're living it. You know what's happening. We're putting this information out. You know it's there. You know what we're saying is truth. But if you ain't going to act on it, and you ain't going to stand up in solidarity and unite with us and fight as one, I don't understand why you even bother listening to the show if you're not going to fight. No one person can fight by themselves. You need an army of people. The strength comes in numbers. The strength don't come in just Scott or just Brian or Don or whatever. It comes in numbers. It takes all of us to make this happen. The union is only as good as its membership. If you guys can't find the time out of your work schedules, or you can't find time to fight for your loved ones, because really that's what this is about, us fighting for each other's loved ones, because without you, there's no me. That's what you people need to realize.
Right.
You think it's never going to happen to you. You just think it's never going to happen to you. But it's happened to me. It happened to American Axle. It happened to St. Louis. It's happened to a lot of UAW members. You don't go from 1.5 million UAW members to what? What is it now, 400,000? Because
what?
Because the union.
Total.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay. So we went from 1.5 to 400,000. Not because the union's doing their job. They're doing something not right. They can't even,
right.
That just tells you, if you go from 1.5 million union members down to 400,000, that just tells you that the UAW leadership is no longer fighting for us, because the membership is dwindling. They don't know how to fight. They don't know
right.
how to fight the global economy. So what I'm telling you people is we need to stand together and fight for leadership reform, because you need leaders in that solidarity house that knows how to negotiate and fight in a global economy. If you don't have those type of people in there that know what the hell they're doing, we're going to continue to lose. You need people in that solidarity house that know how to fight in a global system.
Right.
You remember,
well,
the U.S. dollar is still the world currency. We still got the upper hand if we're willing to fight.
Right. Jim Kokomo is going to lay off 160 hourly salary workers. By
you
the middle
Kokomo?
Of next year.
You said Kokomo?
Kokomo, yes.
Wow.
GM Components Holdings, LLC, Remember, they changed that. The name to all these places, they got all the seniority workers out. They're going to bring all these people in. Remember how that was? You know, that worked for all three of us that way.
Right.
And those people were going to make way, way less money. Even at top wage was going to be way less money than what we're making. And now they're going to do that in Kokomo by the middle of next year. So they weren't supposed to do that. That's not what the agreements called for. They were going to keep these places open. They announced which ones that they were going to cut back on. They're getting all the seniority workers out. They're going to put all these temporaries in there, excuse me, to make it so-called more cost-effective so they can make more money off the parts. Okay? The semiconductor production is what they do at Kokomo. I'm trying to figure out where it's going. I'm sure it's going out of the country. He said that the Kokomo plant will see semiconductor production by mid-2017. With that, it's anticipated 100 hourly and 60 salary positions will be affected by a production change.
So what was the solidarity house? What was the solidarity house on stopping that?
I don't. Doesn't seem to be a statement. There seems to be a General Motors statement that says the decision to wind down is a business decision. Its current production volumes do not support profitable operations. Said they also, the technical capabilities of the current equipment set does not allow the business to compete at a global level, and it's cost prohibitive to invest in new equipment to produce semiconductors in GM Kokomo due to the available capacity and capability of existing suppliers to meet demand for semiconductors. So, in other words, that's, you know, telling you right there, they're not going to spend no money to make that, to do that when they go somewhere else and do it cheaper. I'm trying to find out what those.
Let me tell the membership something. For the tier one, you know, eventually we're going to dwindle down to nothing and we'll be out retired or whatever. And nothing's stopping them from cutting these pensions in half or getting rid of the pensions as a whole, okay, like they did with Detroit city workers or how they were trying to do that with the Teamsters. So you're not safe. Now for the two tier,
no,
there's no guarantee that you're even gonna come up and make any better. So basically, what I'm telling you, whether you're tier one or tier two or your TPTs, we're all losing. We're all in it together. We all got something to lose. So you either come together and fight together, or we're all gonna lose together. Because
right.
We work the same jobs on the same floor for the same companies, and this union can't save us.
Well, I got an answer for you here. Tell them this article from the Kokomo perspective. It says this. The local 292 elected officials who spoke with the perspective said that there may be other opportunities within other GM plants for those who work in semiconductor manufacturing. However, there is a waiting list that includes individuals from other outside plants. Not everyone laid off will be able to find a new position, said the source. The hope is that there will be transfers to other plants as time goes by or as other opportunities at other plants open up, said one board member. It's hard to say if they will ever get back to work, but we hope so. They said the release of GM notes that the UAW GM employees who are presently at work at the site will be treated in accordance with applicable provisions in the UAW local and national agreements. We will similarly be identifying opportunities and options for affected salary employees in the upcoming months. Of the plant's 755 employees, it's anticipated that 600 will remain in Kokomo once semiconductor manufacturing ceases. So it sounds like to me that they're going to take care of their salaried people. And then, of course, with the national agreements, well, we hope that, you know, you might wind up working somewhere else. But we're just here to tell you that not everybody's going to have a job. You know? Yeah, I'd like to hear what Dennis Williams says about this. I agree. You know, you let a local president, I would imagine a president, come out and say something about this. But where is the UAW?
I'll be surprised if he does come out and say anything. He probably won't.
Well, I mean, what's he going to say about what happened down at the other Indiana carrier? They decided not to take that. The terrible offer the carrier offered him. How come we haven't heard anything from Dennis Williams on that either?
Because he don't want us to know that he can't protect us anymore. So they're not going to tell us. They're not going to announce that we're losing membership because we refuse to do our job.
There's a difference between can't and won't.
Well, even if they, okay, not, let me rephrase that. Instead of refusing to do their job, they're not smart enough or understand how to do their job.
Well, that might be.
It's got to be. I mean, because I haven't seen these guys do a smart thing yet.
No.
That's the truth.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, your degree don't make you your degree don't define you, and your degree don't make you smart, okay? Because
right.
Education is a form of, you know, all the books that they learn are written by other people, and it's based off theory, philosophy, outside of math.
Right.
So education don't necessarily make you the smartest person in the world, especially if you lack common sense. And I can tell you right now that everybody at that Solidarity House lacks common sense. They're idiots, every single one of them. And I'd be in your face to tell you that, Dennis. That's why Dennis has got a bodyguard, see? That's why
yeah.
Dennis has got fence around the Solidarity House. Because they know they're not safe. They know what they're okay, they talk about building that wall on the southern border of the United States, but here the Solidarity House has got a fence around a wall against around the Solidarity House. Why do you have that? Why do you have security? What, you don't trust your own membership?
No.
But we're supposed to trust you with our livelihoods?
Right.
And you can't even get into that gate without permission. And you're paying for that building.
Wouldn't you love to see them, the UAW say there will be no more bonuses? Let's vote on the merit of the contract, not because of a damn bonus.
Oh, absolutely.
And,
right.
And people were smart enough, they'd go, okay, what are we giving up for this $8,000 or whatever the hell it's going to be? What are we going to give up for that? Because you're not getting it for free. I've heard say,
right.
Oh, they just gave us $8,000. No, they didn't give it to you, young man. They didn't give it to you. They took probably 20 from you to give you it.
Right. Well, we got about 30 seconds before the show's over.
Yeah.
So,
that lady just said,
well, it was a good show, anyways.
Yeah.
Brian, I like passion.
Thank you,
sir. Scare the
thank
hell
you.
Out of me. I like your passion, although you do scare the hell out of me.
But
I'm hoping
we'll
have Rebecca next week.
She
Jones said, back.
She said she was eating dinner. I thought she was going to join us after she ate dinner.
Oh. Okay. Well.
That's all I know. That's all I know.
Well, hopefully we
go
get
ahead.
Jones back next week and you know, we'll go from there and see what we can
I think Jones,
come up with.
And Jones is here, too. Me and Jones were over here shaking. Brian is rattling on like that, and it scared the hell out of both of us. I can't hang up. Jones did. I say.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't.
You know what? You sound like the people at work now, Don.
Oh, that wasn't good. That wasn't good.
You gotta suspend me off the show because you feel intimidated and threatening now.
Oh man.
I get a 3-week DLO from the show.
I'll represent you, Brian. I'll represent you.
There you go.
Yeah.
I got real counsel now.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, I gotta get ready to go make Don some more pension money. So
yeah, maybe some pension money, you lazy bastard.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, give me a call.
See, Brian, he loves us all. He loves us all.
Of course he does. That's why he quit his job and went back into retirement, because he missed us.
You're damn right. I said, hey, you think maybe this show's only got 10 people listening to it? You're out of your mind. And Cinnamon tonight, she was working. So I said, guess what I'm doing? I'm supposed to get out at 7. I'm retiring. I'm belonging to one worthless union instead of two. And I'm leaving at 6:30. Goodbye. But then I realized the show was scheduled for 7:30. I could have stayed to 7. But hey, what the hell? My whole head was spinning, man. She was changing schedule like a wild woman because I told her. I said, hey, old men need to stay at home.
Yeah.
And she tried to talk me into staying, but no. Couldn't do it. No can do.
All right. Are we back on for 7 o'clock then next week?
Yes. Hell yes. Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. 7 o'clock next week.
7 o'clock next Sunday.
All right. Brian, have a good week. Don't wear out too many pairs of shoes out in front of Solidarity House.
I'll try not to.
If you see Dennis, tell him I said hi.
I'm sure he will.
The fact of it is, you can invite him personally if you want to join the UAW Factory Whistle Show. That'd be great.
Well, I would love that. But now that
Facebook has got that live streaming, I'm going to try to get him on that if he comes out.
Oh, that's awesome. That would be great. Gee.
Yeah.
We can get coming and going.
You can't hide.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
Okay.
All righty.
On behalf of Scott Shingledecker, Brian Keller, myself, the Dead End Kid, we will talk to you next Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on the UAW Factory Whistle Show. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Scott, give me a call. Bye.